Sean from Spinal Empty Soul here in beautiful St. Louis, Missouri at Firebrand Recording, which is a wonderful studio here, tracking our new record, Swan Song, which will start to be released one song at a time here in probably about June, and then the whole thing will come out at the end of the year. So keep your ears peeled for it and check it out when it comes out.
Hey, it's your favorite comedian Anthony Rogers, live in his tour bus, yeah. But also, you need to get a beard like this. People have been talking. They said your shit looks whack. It looks weird. They can't tell your pronouns. You need to get a beard like this right now. And the only way to do that is by using Luxurious Bastard Beard Oil. Great smell, great function, great everything. Just get this, and there's directions on how to use it if you know how to read. But use the link in the description, go to the website, use promo code LEGENDARY, get a discount, do it, thank you, boom.
Hi, I'm Danny from 710 Glass. Come check my shop out. This is our Capone rig, 10 mil joint, smoke out of his head.
I'm AJ over at 710. This is our Puffco selection. This is a Peak Pro. It is completely Bluetooth compatible to your phone. You can control it completely from your phone. Lights, how long you want your session duration, what you want it to burn at.
Hi, I'm Jay at 710. Come check out our large selection of American hand pipes and American made glass.
Dude, we have everything.
Sorry about that. Welcome back to the best podcast. In the universe, we have Chris Holt from Tech Artus here. How you doing,
bro? Hi, I'm doing well. Good to be here. Oh, it'd be good to be here in my own space.
yeah. We've actually been doing the podcast from Tech Artus downtown, where he is. It's his company.
And
it's like kind of like a co-working kind of environment. You can see behind you and stuff.
Yeah,
and
co-working spaces around the city. We're the only real space in St. Louis that has multi-location universal membership. So
you have the best locations too.
Yeah,
Central
West End, U City, downtown.
Best parts of St. Louis.
Yeah, basically straight up that central corridor. I basically picked all the spaces that I like to hang out. So,
dude, that's good. That's
worked out.
That's yeah. I know they're the best locations in St. Louis for sure. I like that. The downtown one's cool. I like the Swan right now. I like that. So, what made you come? What got you into this business? I guess like of a co-working space and stuff like that.
So you know, like any founder story, man, it was a happy accident. So I grew up overseas in Hong Kong, moved back to the U.S. pretty much later in life to go to university, ended up going to WashU in St. Louis, and had never been to St. Louis. It just was the first school that did early decision. It was the highest ranking school that did early decision.
Great school.
I didn't want to deal with applying to a bunch of colleges and all of that stress because – that year, I was studying abroad in Beijing the year of the Olympics, which was a wild time to be there.
Dude, I bet.
It's crazy. And then, so I came here for school. I got a degree in chemical engineering, which I was interested in, like energy and environmental.
I saw that. What did you do with that? I saw that on LinkedIn. What do you do with what is chemical engineering to a dumbass? Like, I mean, like, what? I mean, so, I don't understand.
Chemical engineering is a lot of moving fluids through pipes.
Okay.
High pressure shit that can explode and. I'm the kind of person that doesn't work on my own car because I will never have all the bolts when I push it back. So I kind of figured, you know, at some point if I went into that career, something would explode and I would be responsible for it.
Dude, yeah.
And then I had a handful of like startups with some friends in college.
This OnlyFans sucks. Cute glasses though. You said like,
Nice.
You redeemed himself.
One of these might be my older brother who's promised to come on and talk shit. So
well, that's probably it.
That's probably it. So
the but yeah, so I mean, I was had a like a startup with doing sort of like event ticketing and like community building for nonprofits so that they could do like physical events and then segment their audience for their sponsors so that their sponsors could follow up based on like surveys that the attendees take. And my friends and I, my co-founder for Tecartista, we were literally looking for an office to work out of, found this really sweet old couple who had this building that had been empty since 2008 that was built out as this wild advertising agency building.
Was that the Central SM location?
Yeah.
That was your first look?
That thing was painted purple and yellow and looked like a goddamn Lakers marketing agency when I first took it over.
That building's cool. I like that building.
It's wild. I've never been in a space like that.
So it was like that with the center thing when you first moved
there? Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it had been empty since 2008, since the financial crash. And this is sort of the cool thing about St. Louis and ultimately what I found and fell in love with staying here is like people are willing to give people chances. So they gave us, Jim and Nikki gave us the building for free for a year.
Wow.
Because it had been empty for 5 years. And they were like, we'd more than anything, we want to see this place used. And so we just started inviting all of our other friends who had random companies in to come in and like hang out and work there, and suddenly realized that that was a business that, you know, had a lot more potential, sort of shifted our efforts into that. So
that's awesome. Yeah, this is like if you're watching this is like an old bank that's funded the World's Fair winner right now, like the old Trust Bank.
This
like,
is actually a state historic landmark in Missouri. So it's the bank that funded the World's Fair. We have our cocktail bar down in the main lobby right over there.
If you're not from St. Louis, there's a huge World's Fair in like 1904 in the city of St. Louis where they built like Forest Park and a zoo in the area.
It was the only time that the Olympics and the World's Fair were in the same city in the same year.
Olympics were in St. Louis that year?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
St. Louis at that point was the third biggest city in the world behind New York and Paris.
Before the trains.
Yeah. Before the planes.
Fair.
Trains we were good with. Planes, fuck.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point, yeah.
I mean, that's the term flyover city, you know. But yeah,
I never put that together. That makes a lot more sense.
This bank was the bank that funded the World's Fair, so it was like a pretty significant. Had some technical difficulties.
So I moved the camera. Sorry.
Sorry, I made him drink a few cocktails before we started.
And we're different sizes, so I was trying to like make it make sense on the video and stuff. We got like 377 people watching on Rumble, so thanks for watching on Rumble. Like, if you're from St. Louis or even not, want a cool story, if not, techartista.org. Kind of check that out for the locations we're talking about. If you want to see like cool architecture and kind of like innovation within like, I mean, a national community really, but I mean, it's locally where we're at right now in St. Louis. But
yeah, our big thing too is really trying to tie art back into the entrepreneurship, you know, space. Like
that's very
artists,
important.
Artists are the first people who should learn about entrepreneurship. I mean,
I agree.
The artists have to sell themselves and sell their work and their ideas, you know?
Yeah.
And so all of our spaces sort of, have galleries worked within the actual like office and like working space. And we rotate a lot of regular local artists. We have a nonprofit as well that we give out artist residencies and stuff for. So
that's what's cool about it too, is like the community aspect of like everybody's doing something interesting. Like it seems like there's so many different like companies and like, I mean, you have like weed companies, you have podcasters. I mean, that's what I've met, marketing guys, data people, people.
It's all over the board. And that's like, that's the fun thing is
it is cool.
Everybody coming in with wildly different skills. And like, I mean, we've had multiple companies that started out of like a group of people sitting around, honestly, having beers from our longtime partner and sponsor Four Hands, who has always made sure that we have stacked beer fridges in every space.
Four Hands is great.
They're great. They also fund an insane amount of local art projects. Like they pay local artists like properly, you know. But like people sitting around on our like rooftop patios and stuff, having beer, smoking joints, and suddenly being like, "That's a good idea. We should make a company."
Yeah,
and like, that's sort of the ultimate test of whether or not these sorts of community spaces work. And like, especially post, you know, pandemic, like these are really important spaces for people to gather where like, you know, it's so easy for people, especially if you work remotely, to stay at home. And
see, I didn't like that. I liked the idea at first. Like, I liked the idea of being like, oh man, I have to like go somewhere to work or whatever.
You live in a bus and travel the world. You like to be, in the thick of it.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. But this gives me a great separation because like my bus is like this like comfortable place, like to where I'm at, where like, oh, you know, like bean bags and like giant beds and stuff like that. So, like, comfort place. This place is like, it motivates you, man. Like you said, it's like smoking on that rooftop, looking at this, you're like, man, I need some towers in my life.
You know,
it's like
just that little sexy side leg of the arch.
One-fourth of the arch,
like,
yeah.
It's just that, like, you know, like the evening gown slit, like just sticking the leg out. It's like, it's just enough to be like, oh, shit, people can build big stuff. I should build something.
It motivates you. Yeah, no, it motivates you. I think, like, it's like, it's so easy to get lazy. I think, like, if you're at your house or, like, whatever, like me, a bus, but like, if you're at your house, I mean, it's so easy to get lazy. Just walk out in your bathrobe and do your stuff. And that's kind of a bad thing for business, really. I think it needs to be separate. And it was cool to do. It's better when it's your own. This feels like it's your own. I mean, it is your own office, but it feels like
it's everyone's home, man. Everyone gets 24/7 access to all the spaces. We have people who come in and, like, after a night out, and because they like had an idea and they were close by one of the spaces, and they're like, I'm gonna go work on that right now.
It's the same. I've only been doing this for like a month, and it definitely, like, you feel like it's like your place as well as others. Obviously,
also our security system is that there's always people in the building, so I don't need an ADT.
To get here, you have to get through two doors. You have to get through I'm not gonna tell you how, but. But you have to get through two doors, you can get here, so it's definitely secure too. And then, like, all your, like, two of your locations have that rooftop view, like Central West End and downtown. It's like,
yeah, and even you said no rooftop, but those courtyards are freaking gorgeous. Those huge murals, too.
These cities where I go on like Monday, where I'm like motivated. I'm still motivated. It's Monday.
Well, that's where we've gotten to hang out a bit, because I've been covering one of our locations, you know, that location for us for.
Is that what you're there Mondays too?
It rotates. I'm there about two to three days a week, depending on just me and my COO. We'll kind of split it right now. We had some turnover for staff, and honestly, I'm stubborn. So I was like, I can do the fucking job. Well, so I've been doing
you got to. I mean, if you own a company, I mean, you got to be able to do everything at your company. I mean, I think, really, you should, ideally.
It's a good thing to do, you know, annually or biannually, and like just to sort of roll up your sleeves and, you know, actually do the job that you rely on people to be able to do. And like, you know, I mean, and the thing is, it's not that long ago that I was doing that job. And, you know, we've only really, since right before the pandemic, gotten to the level of, like, before the pandemic, we were at one location. Right at January 1st of 2020, we acquired this building and this location, got everything up and running, and 3 months later had to shut everything down. And then 2022 opened our UCD location, which was also supposed to open in 2020. In like May of 2020, but obviously we delayed that luckily being a partnership space with WashU was chill. They were chill. They were like, yeah, no, we're not having classes on campus either, so don't worry.
So what was it like being like born and raised in like Hong Kong and coming to like America? Like, was it like a culture shock kind of thing, or was it
pretty
easy?
In the U.S. Moved to Hong Kong when I was 4 and was there for most of my life before there. We had moved back like for 1 or 2 years.
So you speak Cantonese?
Mandarin. Okay. I was in an international school program that was, and also it was leading up to the handover back in China. There was sort of this expectation of like a second Tiananmen Square that was like imminent the moment
it
was handed over.
It still happened, yeah.
It was a soft war. You know,
Were you there during that?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow. I was there. When they were like spraying people blue and stuff?
I was right on the harbor when the actual handover happened in 97. I'm like, oh, okay. In my dad's office, and like we watched the fucking queen go out on a boat, hand over the deed, and like keep sailing away. And I remember I was only at 7, but I remember like this feeling of all the adults being like they were kids being like, I'm sorry, dad, come back. Like, we'll be good. Don't leave us. And like
China's nuts to me. It's like
it's really everyone was sort of worried about like them, China coming in strong, but the reality is China, you know, as a government that has doesn't have to like compete to stay in power. There's not a lot of internal competition to stay in power. They can run long games. You know, they can run long plays that the U.S. government can't run because of our like cycle in power shifting.
It's definitely the pros of a dictatorship.
Yeah, I mean, you just hope they're benevolent.
I'm just fucking around. But no, that culture seems crazy to me. Like, I mean, especially like the last couple of years, like with the tensions and stuff. I mean, that's just a crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's at this point though, most of my people from there are gone.
Probably
almost everyone, if they had another passport, they took it
out. Yeah,
and they went, you know, home because. almost nobody was from Hong Kong.
Yeah, it seemed like a London or something or an LA or something where everybody's like
even more so than that, there was no indigenous population to Hong Kong when it became a British colony. You know, granted, it was taken over the, you know, through the Opium Wars, which
was it the 1800s or when was it?
Yeah, 1850. Okay. 1847 was the first Opium War, and then like I think it was almost exactly 50 years later that the second Opium War happened, and they extended the lease of Hong Kong for 100 years from there.
That's crazy. Okay.
But there was no indigenous population. Hong Kong was literally an island off of the mainland of China that would be used to extend like fishing trips. So fishermen would like build these really rudimentary like outposts on there. So there was no like, it's a really unique situation with Hong Kong and like their colonialism legacy that like there was not an indigenous population that had to be fucked over for them to take it. You know? And in fact, once the British started setting up posts there, a ton of people on the mainland came and joined that population. So like it's a really unique legacy and like one of the only in the world that doesn't come with the majority of the expected level of like negatives that any colonial history has had.
There's a soft takeover.
Ultimately like Hong Kong is still one of the like greatest melting pots in the world.
Super interesting culture there. Yeah.
And so that ultimately was a big part of growing up there as a foreigner. And most people were foreigners. There's like Hong Kong Chinese, but even Hong Kong Chinese were only five generations into being in this place. You know, they had been there for 1,000 years.
It probably gives you an edge in business, like having all those cultures when you're young, like to understand. It's like, I think business is just understand cultures
And like, I learned to like code switch and adapt to the people around me since I was a kid.
Was your parents in the military or business when they went there?
No, business. My dad was worked for AT&T for like 30 years and then randomly got offered a job there. We were there for 4 years on like the expat package. We moved home for a year. And within a year, my whole family was like, fuck this. Let's my parents. So we actually moved back. We're like,
are you from St. Louis originally then?
No. Originally from like right outside of Princeton, New Jersey.
Okay.
A small town called Cranberry. My dad's from Queens. My mom's from New Jersey.
Okay.
But like, that's, you know, we moved back, and when we moved back the second time, my dad didn't have a job. Like
do they live here now?
Expensive city. No, they're outside of D.C. and Virginia.
Okay.
I'm working on it.
I was guessing, have you been to Florida lately? Everybody's from New York there. I was wondering if they moved to Florida.
The retirement home of New York.
Dude, it's even, that's pretty true. Even like young people, everybody has like a Bronx accent now. When I got back from like West Palm Beach and like that area over there, I was like, it was all just like people from Europe and New York.
Yeah.
That's like what it seemed like to me. Like,
it's definitely interesting. You know, again, like any major city, though, a melting pot. Even in St. Louis, a city that people, you know, don't expect. If you look in the right circles, you know, you can find a massive international population in a city this. You just have to seek it out.
I had five of those conversations just at this building today. You know, just people like coding and doing that all this stuff.
That makes me really proud.
Yeah, yeah. I went to like this one guy from like Pakistan was showing me his app ID and stuff like that. And I was like, it's such a good situation. I'm like inquisitive, so I just want to learn everything.
This is why you're good to host a podcast.
Because I care about the questions.
Ask questions.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
And I care about the actual questions I'm asking too. It's like, because I think being raised in Hong Kong and coming into like St. Louis has to be like an edge for sure. And then like a kind of an interest. It's just interesting backstory because you don't have like an accent. If I looked at you, I would have never guessed that. I mean, New Jersey makes more sense after you told me, but not the accent.
Ever since I was a kid, though, I will subconsciously shift the way I talk to whatever situation I'm in. Like,
okay,
it's not something I think about. It's just something that like
it's communication.
I learned multiple languages at the same time since I was a baby.
How many languages do you know?
English, Mandarin, a little Spanish, a little French.
You speak Japanese too, I saw?
I speak a little Japanese. So, that's been a long time.
I saw your LinkedIn. Yeah, I was like, LinkedIn, you said Japanese? I'm sorry.
Yeah, luckily I ain't applying for jobs. No one's testing me on that.
But dude, that's five languages or something? That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they come in and out like as I get a chance to start practice them. But
that's a huge edge.
Duolingo every day, just try to. I like to get fucked up and then do language learning because like I feel like it makes it stick better. If I can learn it in a slightly fucked up and intoxicated state, then I really have it.
You know? Also more fun. It's like just learning is way more fun and intoxicated.
It's the, like the advanced level. You know, it's a higher difficulty.
So okay, so you were in Hong Kong for, you went to like high school and stuff out there, I guess. Then?
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
and then you moved to like. You moved to like you did Wash U after that?
Yeah, so I moved.
Oh, that's crazy.
And that was when I came to St. Louis.
If then, you're not from Missouri, Wash U's probably one of the best college player in our state, I'd argue.
Oh yeah.
And then top yeah, in the nation, like one of the top 12, in the nation also.
12th in the nation. Or is something it okay? Like that. I don't.
Yeah. So it's that's pretty impressive
they,
for.
They like, call it like the Ivy. It's like a they call it like the Harvard of the Midwest. Like it's not a it's not an Ivy League, but
my friend went to Northwestern. Keeps trying to tell me it's an Ivy League school too. It's like he's like I went to Northwestern. It's an Ivy League school. I'm like. No, it's not.
No, there's a very clear old ass country club group of Ivy League
and
schools.
And this is Missouri's version of that. This is like if you go to Washington, you just tell somebody.
Washington, dude, has a near $20 billion endowment. Like the amount of money. I mean, Washington Med School is the number one or number two like med school every year, whether that or John Hopkins wins. I mean, like
they have the best bike paths.
It's right off the park. Yeah.
Dude, they have the best bike paths.
The campus is absolutely beautiful. And like there is a ton of really, really smart people there. And like
there is.
I mean, even the dumb people I met there were smart.
Yeah.
You
know,
I like being around interesting people and surrounding, and it's part of what creating a bunch of coworking spaces was like, well, if I can just attract the interesting people to come to me,
that's
then
genius.
I'll always have that. You know,
yeah, it's like Andy Warhol, bitch. So it's kind of like the business version of it.
He was a lot more wild than I was, but
you know. Yeah, fair, yeah. But my wife was, we were talking about this, like, but I'm just kind of communicating with her about doing the working here, doing the podcast here and stuff. And like, she was like basically explaining to me, like, this is probably what, like college, but without the like all the annoying stuff
coming into a space like this,
yeah, because you have the networking still and you're working.
No, you don't have homework, but like, you can assign yourself homework for shit that you want
to
work on
your own job, yeah. No, yeah, you have to make money. You can't just be poor, you know. It's like,
well,
it's
in like, St. Louis, it's a lot easier. It's the cost of living is way lower.
Oh, I love that. You know? I love that. No, West Palm Beach, everyone's a winner, man.
Dude, this place has allowed me to like, I travel like 4 to 6 months out of the year.
That's
like,
awesome.
You know,
even some cool places like you've been to like Portugal and stuff too.
Going to Portugal, going to. Okay. I mean, I've been to most continents except Africa, and
Antarctica.
I got a plan to get out to Morocco soon. I got a friend Morocco's who's got cool. a. That I met in Paris last year, who's owns a like there's like this what is it heritage UNESCO heritage site village, and her family's had like a hotel there since for hundreds of years.
Morocco seems awesome. Morocco seems like wild,
and the food. Well,
that's the best.
I mean, everywhere you
that's
go,
the best.
Food.
Yeah.
You know, I go based on the food.
Yeah, no, I mean, same with comedy. Like, just like I travel the United States off that. Like, I'm like, where's the best food at? Every time you go, every
actually,
time
I'm curious. So, like, you know, St. Louis, I feel like we're pretty proud of punching above our weight on food here. You know, and you've traveled the U.S. pretty extensively.
We had, dude, St. Louis. That's actually why I live out in the city instead of the suburbs, because like, I'm from the suburbs. But, like, the city has every kind of restaurant you want.
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, you get Vietnamese food. That's my favorite, probably. And then you have like all this other. I mean, you have. I mean, you have everything, man. I mean, it changed a lot in 2020, but a lot of stuff's coming back now too. So
what's your favorite new restaurant you found around here? Anything that's
that Noodle House we went to was pretty good.
A $6 banh mi,
dude. That's crazy. Yeah. I'm a sucker for Vietnamese food, though. I'm a sucker for like Asian food and stuff, and like, but I don't know. My favorite restaurant probably Michael's. Totally
classic,
favorite.
Classic.
Michael's Bar off Manchester.
Yeah,
you're familiar?
The Euros. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody loves the Euros.
We did.
Yeah. I think I have a marathon for the longest person to eat there, the most lunches in a row.
All right.
before I had office space.
You might get a picture on the wall.
Before I had office space, I would eat at Michael's every single day. Like, I would just go there every single day and get some variation of their chicken, bro, is it fresh food. You have Hooters up the street, too, if you want to be, like, depressed.
That's too sad.
It is. Dude, I ate there today. It's, like, really weird. It was a weird vibe.
I had a friend who took me to it's funny, he runs this really great restaurant in Central San Kai 202.
Okay.
And he was like trained as like a like classically trained chef who came home to like help his stepfather got sick and had to take over the family like Thai restaurant.
Damn.
And for years Jack would come in and like basically throw dinner parties at all of our co-working spaces for free. He would just be like, I don't get a chance to make this fancy food that I keep coming up with. And I asked him what his favorite restaurant was, and he said Twin Peaks. So we went to Twin Peaks, and like, man, that place was hilarious. You know, I was like,
That's a less depressing Hooters.
I had a bunch of shit to do early next day. So I was like, you know, I went there, you know, I ordered a beer, and they're like man or girl size. And I was like, all right, I'll have a small beer. And they're like man or girl size. And I'm like, all right, man size. Fuck it. Give me a large beer. You have thoroughly peer pressured me into not ordering a small beer.
First time I went to, or not first time, only time I went with my wife, the waitress is like, yeah, the food's not even that bad here. That's like what she told us.
That's the selling point. It's not even that bad.
It's not that bad. You know, it's like, man, like Hooters went downhill though, but it's like all like breaded and crazy and bad meat quality. It's like, I was like, I'm like such a, I don't know. I guess I'm just old.
Nobody went there for the food. Like,
you know, I get that. You're right.
In theory,
it felt like a 90s time capsule. Yeah. I'm like, is this what the 90s was like? I felt that way. And it was like,
there was a restaurant. In Hong Kong that I remember going to a bunch when I was a kid that was like the American restaurant. It was Dan Ryan's, which Dan Ryan is this like very famous figure in Chicago. Like the Dan Ryan Expressway is like
one of the sounds super American. Like, I don't know who this guy
is.
It was the most American name.
And that's the most American name for ever. For me, that was like American food when I was a kid. Like, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, outside of like McDonald's, that was nice American food.
What was your McDonald's like there? McDonald's slapped, dude.
I bet.
The sauce is probably.
But like, even it was only later, you know, again, just traveling the world, like it was only later, more recently, that like McDonald's really started doing like localization of food.
Oh, okay. But it was mass produced at the time.
It's just that now they have specific stuff for markets based on local cuisine.
Yeah.
That local flavors that they're trying to integrate into like McDonald's food.
So I love that.
They'll do like Asian spiced like chicken sandwiches and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And like
their sauces.
But as a kid, man, McDonald's was funny. In Hong Kong, we'd go to like high tea at like the Peninsula Hotel, which was the bougiest fucking shit when I was a kid. But I was a young kid who was leaving hungry from this like probably $300 fucking, you know, hot and fancy British like white glove tea meal where you have little like triangle sandwiches and shit like that. And then we would go to McDonald's. My brother and I would be bitching that we were still hungry.
Yeah.
You know?
That's how that Hilton rooftop bar is. Like I'll get food there and have these like tiny sandwiches and like I go to like a TGI Fridays or something.
You're like, oh, right. I guess this is some warm up.
Yeah. Well, there's a point. I mean, were you broke when you're 22? Like, are you in your 20s also? Like,
yeah,
like,
I started a business. I was very broke.
That's what I mean. So you have to do that.
Still so broke.
But I mean, there's like a difference when you go like afford to go out to eat. Like, I remember my 20s. I'm like, I went from like my parents like spoiling me to like 18. I'm like, I don't have any money.
I just became friends with all of my friends who own restaurants.
That's so genius. That's genius.
I just show up and hang out, and they're like, try this.
No. So like the Hilton just felt good being able to afford like after my 20s, like oh, my late 20s, like I could afford you feel that way. You're like, but then like, yeah, it doesn't fill you up. I'm not trying to make fun of stuff. But I'm just saying, that's how, I mean, I get
worried. This large audience, you're in trouble for blacklisting a fine establishment in the downtown space.
So like, everybody, like the 7 years after Airbnb took over the market, they're mad about a hotel slur. they're super mad. I don't know. Vrbo is funny. Like Vrbo is like a nice Airbnb, but like it's like overpriced.
I think Vrbo is like where it's funny. Like the first time I found out about it actually was like my mom sending me a Vrbo link.
Oh really?
It's like I never stay in hotels. I only stay in Airbnbs or with friends. Same.
I remember the promo codes in the beginning. Like you got all your friends signed up. Like, how many free places did you stay in the beginning?
We had some. We had some low cost trips,
dude. Yeah. Sure. That was the best, dude. Like, that was the
I
best.
Remember my mom sending me a Vrbo thing for some family trip we were taking, and I was like, oh shit, these are nicer.
They are. Vrbo is nicer, yeah. Oh. It's like the rich people of Airbnb.
Yeah.
It's like the rich people. Dude, no, Airbnb, I remember the first
I stayed in a hotel outside of like using, you know, Amex points for a hotel when I was in like the Netherlands recently. I haven't stayed in a hotel. It's so
funny. I did in New Orleans.
Like one or two weddings where it's like everyone's staying at the hotel. Yeah. So I stay there. Yeah. But I mean, other than that, I pretty much every city in the world, like I have someone to stay with or I get an Airbnb because I want to be in a neighborhood. I don't want to be in a district that like.
Hotels have the best bars. Hotels have the best bars though.
Like, I don't know. I will find every speakeasy. Like, okay, I've got a bunch of friends who. As a cocktail bar owner,
your vibes like that. Yeah,
cocktail bars and like, man, I've been in like the all the best speakeasies in every major city, and like that is my fucking thing. Finding that little hole in the wall that's like in a fucking basement. It's dark as shit.
That's wrong with food.
I just throw on my Shazam on autoplay because they're always dropping the most fire music.
And
I
that's just true.
Immediately add that to our playlist for our bar. but like I love those environments where like, and I just will show up even like solo and like sit at the bar and like I just love to watch bartenders work. And so that's when like I had the opportunity to take over this whole space and this cocktail program. It was kind of like finally, because I was that kid all through college who like if you came over to my place for an after party, like I'm just behind my home bar making cocktails for everybody.
That makes sense. Know? You seem like that, yeah. You're
saying I seem pretentious, and I don't. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. I wasn't saying that. I
embrace it. It's okay.
Well, yeah. No, having high expectations of yourself is not a bad thing. I think. Like, I think in the world of like people that are underachievers, they think it is. But I think from my perspective, that's
a really good way to put that.
Yeah, it's like a point. Like nobody that achieves a lot was like, wow, you have goals and like standards for yourself. What a loser!
What a piece of shit!
Yeah. It's like no. I think everybody has their own path, and like, we're all just trying to win and do a dream, man. I think that's what a place like this is about. You feel that almost too. Like everybody has a good idea here or something. Like it's cool, man.
It's cool to be able to see you have been using the space so thoroughly. You know, like there are tons of people who come in and they work remotely for a company. They come crank out a couple days a week here, and you know they don't like they go home. They don't really engage in like. I mean, granted, we're still really rebuilding a lot of our evening and fun social programming since, you know, the pandemic.
Bourbon nights, bro.
Bourbon Fridays. You can't complain about someone giving you free bourbon.
And having like hella choices. Yeah. I'm just like, man, there's like 20
he's
choices
got
20 of bourbon.
Bottles of bourbon. that's just his personal collection. Eric just has a trunk of bourbon that he just brings
that's
around.
That's great.
But Friday is the one night he lets himself drink. So like everyone gets to benefit, reap the rewards of him, having discipline all week long and saving it. Friday, you know.
Yeah. No, that was a cool thing here too. I mean, I definitely like the vibe and stuff. And a lot of people I met, I've just come up with different ideas with already and stuff. I mean, it's definitely it's a good environment for a person like me. They won't shut up and always ask questions.
Encourage that. And like, so you know, the name, the origin of the name with Tecartista, which I think I've told you about.
But they haven't heard yet.
So it's a play. It's an Americanization off of a soccer term, the Tecartista, which stands for the three quarters. It's an Italian term for like basically the number 10, which is a role that like someone like Lionel Messi fulfills. They get the most, well, Messi's not a good example because he scores the most goals too, but like the typical number 10 gets the most assists, not the most goals. They facilitate for other players on the field more than they look to score for themselves.
That's,
and, like,
interesting
that's the role that we try to strive for in running these workspaces. You know, it's not just a workspace, it's a third space. We have members who just join because this is somewhere to get out of their house.
I noticed that with a lot of people.
Have
good
conversations. Like,
yeah, I know so.
You'll notice some of those members that they just want to talk to everyone. And it's like, aren't you here to do work too? But that's okay, you know?
It's funny you said the assist things. It's probably an energy you created, because like I felt like in most of my life, in my 20s, I'm old now, I'm like 37. So like in my 20s, I was like I was all about myself and like how far I can get and blah, blah, blah. And then but here, it was weird that you brought that up. It's like I feel like I hear so many companies that are starting out, and I hear them like a couple of them aren't monetized yet. And I immediately want to figure out how to monetize for them. I'm just like, dude, you got
to
do this. You've had to
figure this out. I mean, you come through like a route of doing comedy.
Yeah,
like,
nobody cares about you when you start.
Yeah,
no, they're like, I'll get a job.
The hardest muck to wade through to become, you know, to get anywhere, to get any notice. Like
for me, it was easier because everything else sucked. A gas station's not gonna hire me. Like no one's gonna hire me. So you have to be self employed at that point when no one's gonna hire you.
I feel like you'd make a decent lumberjack.
Yeah, that industry's gone. Yeah. It's like 100 years ago, I'd be alpha for the workforce. Yeah, but now it's just like that. Now it's like I wouldn't hire me. You know, but it's just like but I'm a good, like, I don't know. I feel like that's what this place is like, a bunch of cool ideas. And I'll hear somebody's comment like, that's so cool. Like this, like the software guy earlier, he was like, I'm not gonna say his name. I'm not gonna name drop these people. But I'm saying like, I saw his idea, and I'm like, you're too much smarter than your audience, bro. I'm like, he's like, you're showing them the app, and like, they don't care about the app. They want to go, like, they want the function. It's like just wave the function in front of their face, and he's just like, he's like, you need to come up and meet the guys. But I was like, bro, you're talking to like people, like they're everyone's an intellectual.
Well, I mean,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, again, coming from something like comedy, you have a really good understanding of like what the base level of like society operates on and how they make decisions and how they think. You know,
yeah,
in order to make a joke appealing to people, you have to understand
or to piss how them they're off. Thinking. Or to piss them off.
Yeah.
Or to know like what makes them mad.
Yeah.
Like politics, for example. Like,
and that's a really unique thing to be able to offer that insight to someone who's coming, who's a software developer who operates behind a computer.
Yeah.
Their audience is on the other side of a computer. They don't have the direct connection
with them. But he could do anything.
A stand-up comedian has a really fucking direct connection with their customer.
That's true. That's true.
They will get booed if they don't, if they don't like it.
They'll try. They'll
there's a certain empathy that comes with that. You know, again, this is part of the this is why we need to interact in person. These you can't seek out these sorts of random interactions. They just have to happen, you know, somewhat organically. They happen because you put yourself in a space and commit to I'm going to show up and who knows what conversations I'm going to have.
That's what's cool about it.
You're open to it.
No, that's what's cool about it. Yeah. I've been able to see and do a couple companies that just seem cool. And introducing other people, like say I have a guest that's in an industry one of these guys do or something like that, then you introduce these people constantly. I think I got people meetings with weed industry people and there's stuff like that, just off of that's so it's funny you said the assisting and where I am spiritually almost is I wanna help more people than myself is where I'm at now. I feel like it's I think that's very low vibration, only help yourself. And I think that I'm trying to get to a higher vibration where I'm actually serving and helping people more. So on top of I'm gonna keep this going forever. I mean, if you got we got 663 people just watching this, watching me mumble to a future billionaire here. You know, that's.
I appreciate
that's a Tuesday. You know,
I appreciate the belief.
No, I mean, you just have that vibe, man. That brings me my next. Do you have any cash you can borrow? Do you have any money to borrow?
This cannabis business takes off. My business partner and I. My business partner is a man. He's a 55-year-old Sikh dude who moved to St. Charles of all places when he was 14 from India, turban wearing motherfucker who moved to the least tolerant place in the 70s, you know, as a kid. And came up having to really make his own way. He's made some really awesome level ups in the last couple of years, acquiring some food manufacturing businesses, bet in the house, and then the bet was he could come in and turn it around. And it's been, you know, again, kind of a similar type of person who comes from a multicultural background that is able to exist in multiple spheres. And it's been an interesting journey on our end together. We just got a cannabis license from the state of Missouri for manufacturing. We're hopefully hitting commencement in the next month. We've got some partners who've been doing hemp extraction for 6 years or so in the Boot Heel of Missouri that I just went down there earlier this week and checked out of the facility that they've built out. It's ironic because I don't really even smoke that much weed anymore. I don't have time for it, but I still love it. Still will always be a stoner at heart.
Just understand the culture, really. That's all it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's weird. Yeah, that's why the weed industry is so easy for me. Is I smoked for ever. And then I still do kind of, but not like I used to.
Not the first thing when I wake up like I used to for,
yeah,
I don't even know, 10 plus years.
My day revolved around. I just changed some joints all day. I just keep rolling them up. I'm like,
I took so much pride in my joint rolling. I took so much pride in it.
I remember just smoking with people, and they'd be losing the fabric of reality. I was
we're gonna keep going.
Yeah, we see how far this goes. That's definitely a very interesting industry right now. And I think it's in the gold rush where you made more money selling shovels and shit.
Yeah, so that's the line, right? You want to be the person selling pans and shovels.
That's how I feel about it right now. And I think that's what ads and stuff is. I mean, there's so many weed companies I've worked with, and I have a shelf of weed stuff. He was sent me from on my bus, next to my beef jerky shelf.
I gotta introduce you to my friend who is a really high-end chocolatier who's worked in the highest Michelin star restaurants in New York and moved back recently, and he's just been for fun making really amazing weed chocolates.
That's
the nicest chocolate ever. I mean, he's a certified chocolatier.
You ever had Bissinger's?
Oh yeah,
Bissinger's. Oh, yeah. How's it compared to that?
Yeah, but
better.
It's Yeah, it's better because
better than
weed.
I love it.
It has weed in it.
Oh, fair, fair, yeah, fair. Yeah, Bissinger's needs to get in the THC market for sure.
Is it Bissinger's has also gone through some transitions of ownership and like product quality. I feel like has it.
Oh man,
shifted a little.
I delivered food like 10 years ago, and that was always like the perk of like delivering food. It was like you go to like Bissinger's, like you're giving a delivery, and they give you like this box of like chocolate. You feel like you're too much of a piece of shit to hold. I'm like, these are too good for me to ever
this
even
looks
eat.
Very fancy.
Yeah. Am I gonna break this? Like, am I gonna break the door coming in here? It's like, I don't know. It's like a Neanderthal like delivering sandwiches or something at the time.
There's some really good stuff. Honeymoon Chocolates is a new spot that's got this really great honey. I think it's Honeymoon or Honeycomb. It's a WashU MBA who recently like opened this chocolate shop in Clayton. That's really, really good.
That's awesome. They didn't mix that. They didn't mix THC with high-end dining. I think that would rule.
It's coming, you know. I think the reality is even Missouri is, you know, there's actually – so we just hosted the, like, regulatory – local, like, state regulatory, like, conference at
Tempo Vista. That was
cool. And it's interesting because, like, the main priorities are really around, like, some of the Delta 9 and, like, unregulated things, like the THCA and stuff. It's, like – totally bypassing any legislation, like, and federally is bypassing any legislation. Unless a state has said they can't do it, people are bringing in, just like they were bringing in CBD and stuff like that before legalization happened. So, like, in Missouri, you can buy weed at any gas station, but it's not weed.
Everywhere but Idaho. Idaho seems like really strict on it, but everywhere else seems to chill with it. And
it's like kind of, it is weed in some way. It's all analogs and things like that, but it's also, there's just no, I mean, it's you're selling, you know, an intoxicating product. Like, there's no regulation on what's going into that at all. And so the state is sort of regulatory wise is pushing and prioritizing some regulation around that.
As an American, I'm with the deregulation. I feel like as long as like children are getting it, really.
Yeah. I mean, age is fine. It's a shame because, like, you know, you saw, Oregon just did a total deregulation, right?
Yeah.
And ultimately, it was a disaster, but not because it isn't a good idea. Like, what happened in Portugal and places like that is pretty solid evidence that, like, it is better to do deregulation and, like, mental health and, like, health support, like, addiction support.
Oregon's a bad test market.
But
for
ultimately,
that.
Oregon was a bad market because it was shoved down regulators' throats.
Have you been to Oregon?
No.
Dude, okay, so you go there, they don't wash their this is the dirtiest shit I've ever been to. You go to Red Robin, they're like throwing like dishes in like a cubicle.
The problem is it was pushed by a vote of people, and like, of course, it's, you know, it's awesome in the U.S., like the fact that we actually have populist, the ability to move populist like agenda items forward, but it was put onto the Department of like Health and Human Services in Oregon right before COVID happened. So they weren't able to actually deploy the entire and actually ironic, like the most important part of it and the like health and human services part of it to like actually do like needle exchanges and things like that. So they just opened it, legalized it, and it took them like a year and a half to get the actual like support services line because it happened to align with COVID.
Yeah.
And obviously they were focused on that.
It's like throwing you a key to a jet.
They're pulling it back because they were like, it was a disaster. Reality is, it was like, yeah, it was a sort of a perfect storm of things that made it a disaster, but it doesn't actually mean that, you know, deregulation is still a bad idea.
Well, it's the lack of education. I can see that, and like, it's like throwing you like the keys to a jet and you not taking classes for it first.
Yeah, you don't know how to fucking fly.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. Yeah, and it makes sense. And Oregon's a bad marketplace. It's a weird market. That's a weird spot. I like Oregon. I'm not trying to like that.
I mean, you've been.
It's dirty, though.
To like pretty much every state.
Right? Most. I've been to Alaska and I haven't been to New Mexico, I think, or Maine.
How have you missed New Mexico?
I purposely tried.
Avoiding
Well, it's always the desert in the summer when I'm traveling. I'm like, I'm not going through there or Arizona. Nope. It's like, I've been like through parts of Arizona, but it's just like, no, I mean, it's not the top spot. You know?
I would agree.
Even the aliens didn't want to be there. They crashed, you know, it's like, nobody wants to be there. But Oregon was like really dirty, which is weird. Man. It was a really dirty state. And,
my best friend moved there, 6-7 years ago, had a kid, and his wife is a art therapist, and Oregon has a really good state funding for therapy for like Medicaid programs for supporting and paying for therapy. So they moved out there, but it's funny. He's from U City. he's mixed, and like he was like, yo, this is the most like low-key racist place I've ever been.
Missouri.
Like, he's like, I mean, he is half black, half white, and it was like, yeah, they don't know how to handle me. Like, it's not that they're intentionally trying to be racist, it's just that they have, you know, Oregon also had literally laws for years not letting black people in the state.
Oh, wow.
For so long.
You can pump your own gas.
You can pump your own gas almost. Oh, you can't pump your own
gas. You couldn't in Oregon until recently, and then like small.
Yeah, New Jersey is the only other place that does that.
Yeah, I was just like, it was culture shock. I'm like, they're like, you're doing all stuff. I'm like, what are you
that
doing?
That was the thing since I was a kid, like coming back to the U.S. That was like, I just thought that the U.S. everyone.
You're like, where are you?
Someone pump their gas.
You're like, where are your gas peasants?
Yeah.
You don't have any gas peasants?
Where are your gas servants? I'm out, just hand out the window, snapping when I pull up there. Like, ah, it must be closed.
It's like, oh, yeah, that was a weird thing, too. Like, I don't know. Nebraska is surprisingly really nice. Like, that's like it's a place I found that I really like.
Yeah, is Nebraska one of the more interesting states? That's
It's clean and nice. I mean, it's I don't know if it's interesting, but it's like Missouri, but nicer.
Yeah,
like everybody's like nice to you.
Yeah,
Missouri's kind of like a fuck you kind of state. Like,
it's an interesting state. You know,
I love it though, the
Show Me State is brandished as a positive thing, and ultimately it's like, I don't know. You can't use deductive reasoning to like figure out something until someone shows it to you. Like that actually seems like a really terrible thing to be touting.
It's home, so but it's really like it's weird to get people to get along here almost. Like people don't get along very well.
Well, it's small enough that I feel like everyone's kind of got their pocket and they stick in it, you know. And I think I hear more and more about similar sized cities that like every city kind of complains about that. So I like when I first came here, this is really a lot of my exposure to like the US and also coming to St. Louis that like, you know, the like where we had Michael Brown being murdered and stuff, like, and the start of so much of the Black Lives Matter movement literally being here.
Yeah, yeah.
And like it was really fascinating on my end because I didn't grow up with any like awareness of, I mean, like I had a like an academic awareness of like, you know, slavery and the legacy in the US, but like had never experienced it. And then to come here and basically be living a block off of Del Mar, the most racially divided street in like the country, I believe the world post apartheid in South Africa, like it is now the most racially divided street. And still, even without any like external forces, like direct initiatives driving it, it's just legacies of like, you know, restrictive banking and deeds and stuff like that, which, it's really interesting because like the St. Louis that I see and the people who opt into communities like ours of like really like fucking doers and hustlers and, you know, movers and shakers, like this is like, I don't know. It's a really integrated overlapping place in the right communities. But I see that there are these legacy institutions that, you know, have.
Well, they'll tell you every 5 minutes, you know. Yeah. They'll tell you every 5 minutes. It's like, man, I just don't care about crayon colors. I'm like, so I just don't give a fuck about any of that. But
crayon colors?
Yeah, I'm just like, everybody's like arguing about crayon colors, man. So if you, I'm not saying it's not there. It's like, it's not a concern of mine. I mean, I want everybody to be treated equally. I get that part. But I'm just saying, like, outside of that, I just don't care. It's like, to me, it's just like, man, just get rich, shut up. You know what I mean? That's how I feel about everybody. It's like, you complain or work hard.
Our system,
it's like work hard, get rich.
Rewards. You know, it's an economic system that rewards dollars and contributions into society that we measure on, can we capitalize on?
Yeah, it's like a rich and poor thing so.
But that's the game.
But it's a divide. So, I think racism is a divide tactic to divide people in several ways. I mean, I'm a Christian, so I think it divides one is God, one. And two, I think it divides like Americans. We're not as strong as we could be. We're bickering about things that don't matter.
No, absolutely.
That's how I view it completely. And it's just like, to glorify any side of
I'm the society. Last time there was sort of a coming together of that came with a like really great common enemy in World War II.
You know,
that brought this country together.
That's how America is. America is arguing with each other until there's a common enemy, and we go beat their ass.
Fuck them up.
Yeah.
No,
that's 100%. That's where it's at, and like I think that's what I mean. And there's a lot of pain in the world, you know. I mean, to be like permanently sad about everything that ever happened is like nuts to me. But that's me personally speaking, yeah, and I don't even know if I care about my opinion. I'm just saying my opinion. I mean,
I hear you.
I just like, I'm just trying. I'm so far off from like what everybody's crying about. They're like World War III and racism and this. I'm like, I'm just trying to get rich. I don't give a fuck. Yeah. I just don't give a fuck. It's like, go kill each other. I'll buy your land. Whatever the fuck. I don't give a fuck. I mean, it's like, you fucking idiots. If you fall for war propaganda, go kill each other. Whatever. I'm going to take your land.
I mean, it's interesting.
That's how I feel about it. It's like,
I don't know. There's definitely
we're in a weird time.
We are, and like, you know, these it's not really like, yes, humans have always sort of like leaned towards division, and we fall into like group mentalities, right?
That's tribalism, yeah.
It's,
for sure.
But it's a evolutionary thing that we've required to survive, right? Stereotypes exist because it's easier for us to share stereotypes. Like in I'm talking, you know, 10,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, like it's easier for us to share stereotypes and like survive because we, you know, assume the worst. And even if 80% of the people wouldn't harm us, the 20% that don't, we don't get hurt by because we just, you know, avoid that population. I mean, it's an evolutionary like survival tactic. And ultimately, like,
I see that.
You know, I think there it has worked. It has become less necessary in society to to adhere to those. But there's sort of a lag in that like adoption and understanding in our, you know, modern society. It takes time for these changes to be understood and learned.
Definitely.
And you know, at the end of the day, like people are more similar than different, but find ways to divide themselves, and like,
oh, for
it's,
sure.
It's ultimately one of the like sort of saddest parts of the human condition, you know. No. And like growing up the way I did, where like, I mean, dude, I have traveled alone throughout all sorts of parts of the world. Like I have traveled alone through like Myanmar when the fucking Rohingya massacres were going off and shit was they were like, nobody should be here. I went to a wedding in Karachi with a friend who's from, you know, very, very like old school, like wealthy family there. And I literally demanded that my driver and security guard drop me off alone so I could walk. They were not happy about it, but I was like, I'm going to do it, you know? And like I've been all over the world and people are much better than we give ourselves credit for.
Oh, dude, yeah. There's a reward structure for being a victim, like to where like basically, if you're strong, you're almost like punished in America right now. It seems like to where like they don't want strong people to. I mean, in my opinion, believe in God, love your country, anything really. I mean, I feel like in a way like that, I'm ostracized and I don't care about it. Like to be honest, like people would be like, oh, like all these atheists get pissed at me or something like that, or all these people like all these like young communists get pissed at me or something like that. I'm like, I just don't care when it comes down to it. I mean, and I think I would feel like a complete idiot if I agree with everybody that was around me. And I think that it's a collaboration.
I mean, collaboration. You would be hedging on your own beliefs because there's no way to agree with everyone, you know.
And I don't want to. Like, I mean, it's like we get along, we just don't have to agree.
The ultimate test is really, are you contributing more good than harm?
I think that's the soul test. I think that's the soul test.
Yeah.
I think that's why we're on Earth.
I'm an atheist. I have friends whose father was like a PhD in physics when I was a kid and bought me A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking when I was 10 years old. Illustrated version.
Yeah.
I love the only way I was going to be able to understand it. But like that shit blew my mind when I was 10 years old. And I started questioning everything.
You should question
things. I literally put my foot down. I was like, I am not going to church. You will not let me. This community will not let me ask these questions around the universe. They dissuade me from asking questions, and I can't, that is not a healthy way to move forward. And even I think that, you know, the church has moved massively in the direction of tolerance under the more recent, like papal leadership, but like, because it's also trying to survive and shifting society, you know.
It's definitely lost a lot of power in 500 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, compared to 500 years ago.
It lost a lot of power. Quite the fall from grace. But I mean, but I don't necessarily think religion speaks for God personally. But and I think that, like, I don't know.
It's an individual relationship.
It is.
Your relationship with God is your relationship with God.
Very true. Very true. And, like, I'm not one of those guys that tries to persuade people to join me in heaven. I'm like, more heaven for me. You know, it's like, I'm glad you won't be there. You know, it's like, I'm just joking. Yeah. But I think everybody's, that's what's great about America is that we have freedom of religion. We have freedom of speech. We have all these great freedoms to, like, be yourself.
We have elected officials who have taken their oath on, like, Carl Sagan's books, you know?
Yeah.
Because they can take it on any book that's holy to them, you know? Yeah. I mean, that's
nuts to me.
Like,
there's a lot of people who
push that, like, the American system is failing. And I got to be honest, coming from a country, you know, that has been completely subverted by another entity, you know, and what China has done to Hong Kong.
They're doing to us too. I mean, they're trying to, but
at the end of the day, like, I understand that people aren't happy that society isn't moving as fast as they want. Like, some of my best friends come from really marginalized groups.
Yeah.
And they are genuinely pissed that society's not moving along to accept them as much. But at the same time, I feel like we are still moving along. The pace that society move along is like an averaged out pace across everybody.
100%.
And unless you're smack dab in the middle of it, it's either going to be too fast or not fast enough for you. But at the end of the day, like, the systems and the tenets that we have in American society, I still believe is the best, 100%. Most dynamic system that 100%. Allows for human input, you know, like democratic input, still allows for a free market economy that allows for the level of innovation and risk taking that rewards people who are willing to take a chance, and also has a fair, you know, I think American society has a ways to go in, like, socializing a number of things that need to come out of the free market. Like, I do believe education costs are going through the roof, and
a scam for sure.
Needs to be brought, like, what things that are societal benefits need to be taken out of the free market. The free market gets the system started, but then at a certain point it needs to be pulled out. That includes like healthcare, education, you know, insurance. Insurance is a risk distribution program that should not also be making billions of dollars off of the fact that, like, you know, they're like, instead of just rewarding and paying out people for all buying into, like, sharing this risk. But they're sort of all the right components of this system.
Insurance shouldn't even exist because medical care should be affordable.
Well, I don't even mean medical insurance.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, house insurance, like, risk distribution should be a social benefit.
Very Ponzi scheme-ish.
Those things should be run by the government, where we at least have some like ability to vote to change it.
I think in your theory of the government, yes, because, like, when you say ran by the government, you think there's capable and accountable people.
I've dealt with a lot of. I know that there's not.
I just mean, look at their spending. I'd be like, we're trillions of dollars in debt to these, like, complete idiots, and basically they need nothing more. They need less. They need less.
Look at our. I think especially look at the actual American personal debt.
Oh yeah,
we're not in debt. The government's largely so far in debt because everyone else has also agreed that. Hey, it's cool to ride this debt.
That's a great fucking point too. Yeah, individual accountability,
like,
as well.
There's a tolerance for that. I mean, even on my end as an entrepreneur, I've had to take on a decent amount of personal debt to get my shit up and running. You know, that is something that I've had to, like, really work to build, to work down after, like, taking on those early risks. But, like, they were more calculated than just I wanted to go buy a Ferrari. No, shouldn't have.
Right. Yeah, like, the government's the most incompetent thing I've seen lately. It's like the machine's well built, but the people in there are just selling out hard. So it's like these people think they're famous.
That's come from a couple key things. Citizens United was a massive failing of opening up lobbying to the with no upper limit, with no, you know,
lobbying,
like, to lobbying. The level of corporate lobbying is the actual single thing that may be the poison pill that undermines our entire system.
Wow, yeah, that's good.
Like, the whole reason that the government is filled. Why is the EPA not actually regulating and like protecting water? Because they've been lobbied so hard and short-staffed. Because I mean, we sit there and pump money into all these areas of government.
Yeah,
the largest actual socialized program in the country. People sit there and bitch about they sit there and bitch about things like food stamp programs, SNAP programs, and things like that. You know, because God forbid, you know, people are abusing that system. I don't think anyone really wants to have to be on fucking food stamps. But like, because everyone I know who grew up on food stamps was mortified that they grew up on food stamps.
Right. No. Know?
But
well, sure, it's a temporary thing, not a long-term solution.
There are some people who abuse the system, but failing to provide the service because there are abusers is an immoral failing of society. And
yes.
And the fact that like we, you know, we deregulate or defund these programs so that the whole thing with Boeing going on right now, the FAA is so underfunded that Boeing employees individually had to be the FAA, like appointee, the in-house appointee who is supposedly going to go report their own employer on cutting corners. No, like that's
right. You're not gonna lose your job. Yeah.
Why? Because we cut all the funding for the FAA. But like, again, we look at socialized programs. People complain about things like SNAP and stuff like that. The largest socialized program is the first-time homeowners tax credit. Yep. That is mostly given to white working Americans who sit there and bitch about handouts when they actually gain one of the biggest handouts. But it's easier to target, you know, a more distressed population who actually really needs it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And the homeowner tax credit is an important thing.
I think
it's how we create wealth in this country. But the fact is, most of the people who bitch about corporate or socialized programs don't realize that they own a house. They fucking receive a government handout to get that house.
Yeah.
But it's not the sort of socialized program that people talk about.
I think it's a fear of poverty.
But it's literally like something stupid. Like it's 10 times as much money a year goes to that program than goes to the SNAP program federally.
Yeah, and houses should be like way more affordable too. Like, houses are nuts. $300,000 for a ranch style house.
People
like,
who sit there and complain about people taking government handouts, a lot of those people own houses and don't realize that they get a government handout.
Well, complaints it's for just, losers and solutions are for winners. That's how I feel. It's like okay, it sucks.
I totally agree.
It sucks. Go fix it. Go fix what the fuck you think sucks. Otherwise, shut up. Yeah. That's how I feel about most things.
Go run for fucking office.
Yeah, do please, something.
If you care enough and want to do the work, go run for office.
And I think it's just shaming of like people are terrified of poverty. Well, so they never want to be in that situation, and they all know they're like two bad mistakes away from being poor.
So they
shame the people that are.
This country doesn't know real poverty.
And that's real.
From like Southeast Asia.
Oh yeah.
Like there is real poverty, the likes of which the lowest rung of our society is still light years above.
And that's a great point too. But I would even argue that the people that are taking advantage of like food stamps are still poor and should probably get them. I mean, if you have to take advantage of a food program to eat, you're probably just compensating for.
All right, you said you're a Christian, right?
Yeah.
So what? Let them take advantage of it.
It's how we
treat the worst of our society that will be judged, you know, in Christianity. That is how you'll be judged by, you know, your creator.
I like how you call it the worst of society.
The people in the worst position of society.
I just said it myself.
Yeah.
The concept's hilarious, but like, I get what you're saying. I get your point, though.
That's not a good slip.
No, I know. The concept, I get your point. I just thought it was funny.
That was not good.
It's just funny to poke holes in it. But I think that's great.
I mean, so what?
You should help everybody all the time,
Just because someone abuses the system doesn't mean that we shouldn't be more benevolent to – sure, let them abuse it. We have so much abundance in this world, especially as technologies increase. The level of abundance that humanity has, like we can all have everything with the technology that we have. We should be demanding that we better deploy for all of our people. You know,
definitely. I mean, we should always help everybody all the time.
Everyone should fucking vote,
regardless
of what you believe in. Like,
make your own bills. I mean,
this country, it matters. Your vote makes a fucking difference.
I agree. Our
voting rates in this country are abysmal. Granted, there are plenty of things that
they feel underrepresented.
Way harder for people to vote. I mean, we don't have a national holiday for voting, which we absolutely should.
I agree.
A massive amount of like Republican strategy is disenfranchising access to that because more educated people tend to vote against them, you know. And I'm not trying to say. I know I have plenty of friends across all parts of
I think the divide is what's wrong with it. I think if you're a Democrat or Republican, you love your country. And I think that like there's different ways of expressing it. And I don't think either side understands the other side. I vote mostly
Democratic, but I am not a registered part of any party because I don't believe in party politics.
I'm not interested in only joining one team. I think the lack of understanding is the problem more so than a party, because I think that Democrats don't understand Republicans, Republicans don't understand Democrats. I think Republicans all think Democrats are kind of like faggy and stupid, and I think that the left thinks that like Republicans are all racist, Nazi, fascist idiots, and I think like both parties are wrong.
There's oversimplifications, and again, they're stereotypes.
Survival stereotypes that
make it easier for groups to gather and coalesce around some other entity.
When we both want what's best for the country, and I think that's what's important, we need to have a lot of common ground.
You need to meet people that have different opinions than you.
All the time. Right. I'm Republican. Everybody thinks all these things about my party. I'm a member of the GOP. Everybody hates me for the wrong reasons. Yeah. That's like how I feel.
You're not saying you shouldn't hate me, but those are the wrong reasons.
That's how I feel. Like people would try to fight me in their backyard. So, I mean, it's completely nuts to get that fired up, in my opinion. And I'm just against the divide. Like, just because I disagree with
people who sit there and demonize someone else, it's like, when was the last time you went and volunteered at a fucking soup bank? When's the last time you showed up to work an election poll because you believe in the fabric of our society?
You should do that. Yeah,
there's a lot of armchair quarterbacking.
I did a food pantry two months ago. I did 15 hours there. It was regulated by the state, but I'm joking. But no, I'm so strong. But no, I did it 2 months ago. That's a good point.
I'm actually surprised. Missouri, coming here to the state, it had a lot of notions on that. And in the role that we're in with having these community spaces, we host a lot of events we've hosted tons of campaigns for, congressional races. We've hosted all these like sort of economic development forums and stuff. And I really have to say, Missouri, fortunately, like Missouri is not a state that's going to drive like the country forward. But they are very fiscally responsible. We have the largest like budget surplus of any state. I mean,
Missouri.
We could use with a little more spending on it. I would agree.
Missouri's low key amazing. No one knows anything about it.
I called every State Department and gotten someone to pick up the phone within 5 fucking minutes.
Yeah, this
place, as a business owner, do you know how hard it is? Like the amount of shit to navigate.
Yeah.
Paperwork wise and like reporting licenses, all of this stuff. I have been able to get someone on the phone. Like, I can't call the fucking IRS. Like, I mean, they'll find me if they need something. I know. But like, I can't get someone on the phone there. A few times I've had to, I've waited on the phone for hours.
Yeah.
And as a business owner, I have so much shit every day. I am working 12 hours a day. Like,
no, I get
sitting
it.
On the phone all day is the worst possible thing I can think of having to do.
I think Missouri goes hard. I like all of it. I like the suburbs. I like the country. I like the city. I love it all. And like I think like
I love the country.
Yeah.
For the weekend.
The country's amazing.
Yeah, I love to get out far enough that I can really watch the stars.
Yeah. Buy food from the Amish and shit. Man. I love it. You buy the Amish.
I was just down in southern Missouri, in Arnold, Missouri, for the eclipse. A friend of mine actually bought land down there for this. His grandma's from there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, "That's cool. It'll be kind of cool to buy somewhere that grandma can come back to her old town, and it's along the path of the eclipse."
Yeah.
And oh my God, I had the best Amish food while I was down there. Pies, bread.
The bread's
eggs were delicious. Like,
I go Cuba, Missouri has like a Amish farmer's market there. I always want to take a selfie with them. They never let me, but
into that.
I'm like, can I take a picture of these? He's like, no. I'm like, how do I farm? He's like, here you go. I'm like, how do I survive?
I got a good buddy who, to give a shout out to, Dave Bloom, who owns Such and Such Farms in DeSoto, Missouri.
Cool.
Who is one of the like least expected like farm type people. Who literally he owned the Skate Laborious Church that burned down in North City.
Okay.
That was that like old skate park church.
It
burned down about a year ago. But him and his wife ended up buying this plot of land that, it's 50 minutes or so south of the city. And it's massive, and they run an entire sustainable farm. They provide like
that's a feature.
Pork and like beef, bacon, and all these vegetables to all the highest end restaurants here.
Yeah,
and like it's the kind of place that like makes me realize like, oh, this is an important thing that I want to be a part of to support, because this is a sustainable way of living, even though I am a city kid and I will, I can't leave the density of the city. I don't need to hear my own thoughts more than I already do.
Yeah. I love both for different reasons. I mean, the city is good for business. The country's good for relaxing. And like, I mean, but I think, like, I mean, with the lack of trust we have in our food supply, I mean, it's, we're going to the
disconnection
farms.
We have from our food supply is terrifying.
We're going, back to the farms.
The next COVID type wave is not going to be that. It's going to be some animal transmissible disease that we already are, like, I mean, the amount of antibiotics we have to pump through with the way industrialized, you know, meat, the meat system is terrifying.
I buy from farmers, man. I got a stack of
very vegetable and like not vegan, but like a vegetarian as much as possible. But it's not that I don't eat meat. I just don't
eat bad quality meat.
Any meat that I don't eat the meat. You can pick up at Schnucks. Like,
scraps. It's like scraps.
I eat a lot at like nice restaurants where like, the farm that it comes from is literally on the wall.
Farmers markets where it's at too, man. We've got some
great farmers
markets. We do. Lake St. Louis too, outside in the suburbs a little bit too. I'd say Lake St. Louis and St. Louis are the best.
I'm gonna have to come visit you when you go down to the lakes this summer.
We'll have to. We'll do another podcast later.
15 years, and I've never been down to the Lake of the Ozarks because it kind of terrifies me. It seems like the booniest, most like it seems like the Jersey Shore of Missouri, being originally from New Jersey, the Jersey Shore was like, it drove me crazy that was the stereotype.
Bro, it's
all over the world. That was the stereotype of like people like, you're from New Jersey, Jersey Shore. I'm like, God damn it, these bastards,
dude. Yeah, it's like a white trash Vegas, bro. I love it. I love it though. It's like, I love it though.
I can get along with anyone anywhere. So,
I'm calling myself white trash for loving it. You know, I'm just saying.
I love showing up and experiencing something that anyone. People are passionate about, regardless of if it's something that like
bar hopping on a boat, bro, awesome. Bar hopping on a boat, boat taxis, bro, awesome. All the restaurants are great. You know, I mean, you'll have like these wild, like old ladies, which is funny too. Like you'll have like 20-year-olds be wild next to like these old ladies. Like, everyone's just like, I mean, dude, having a beard almost makes me like the mayor there, bro. Everyone's like, nice beard. It's on repeat, bro. It's like, it's great for the ego.
You need a corn cob pipe.
And just a book to carry around.
Maybe a straw hat, proper old school Mark Twain style.
Yeah. Mark Twain's from here too. He's from here too. I'm jealous of how much he's accomplished. Like every time I see, I'll just be in the middle of nowhere. I'm like in Mark Twain Forest on like Mark Twain Boulevard. This like, there, it's great, but it's like, it makes you feel like a loser though. Would you look at, I'm like, man, I think I'm killing it until I see what Mark Twain did.
Honestly, you probably have a larger audience than he did. So let's be honest. You definitely have a larger audience than he did.
Well, let's rename the forest in Missouri then. Let's rename
Anthony Rogers Forest.
I'm like, now I don't hate Mark Twain anymore. I was like, but I know, throw any links to your names. Like, I feel like we'll talk for 9 more hours. We keep these kind of like hours or so. The TechArtista.org, obviously.
Yeah, on my end, we got TechArtista.org. We've got here our cocktail, TechArtista.foundation.org, which is a nonprofit that manages and runs our like artist residencies. TrustSTL.com, that is our cocktail bar. Quick shout out to my business. I help my brother start labfalcon.com, your go-to place for any lab consumable products.
Check out all these websites.
That's the main stuff I got for you.
If you want to come collab with like smart people and like run businesses, or you have a business idea or something like that, I mean, TechArtista.org is pretty cool. I use all three offices because it's just fun.
You take advantage of our universal membership more than anybody else. I really have to, bro. That's how I knew we were going to get along immediately, because I was like, oh, he gets it.
You go anywhere. If you want to go to Little Saigon, you got the Central West Inn right there. If you want to hit
it's so funny because it really is determined on which location I go to based on what I want for lunch.
It is, though. That's where most business goes down. If you're in business,
deciding factor.
Dude, yeah, and if you're in business, you should know that like business is lunch. Go to lunch with as many people as you can.
I mean,
that's all it is.
Early days when I was starting this business, my goal was literally just never to eat lunch alone.
Yeah.
Find an excuse to go take someone to lunch or just break, you know, go have lunch with someone, because
you weren't so much in
it
business.
It is in those downtime moments that like the real conversations and real sort of exchange of ideas happen.
Well, it's great networking. I mean, we got Sugar Fire down here. Sugar Fire is a spot out here, I think.
Yeah, Mike Johnson's got a great.
Is that his name?
Funny enough, my business partner and Mike Johnson had a like a Indian burrito restaurant in the mall in like the late 90s, early 2000s. That's they awesome. Were running.
Indian food's great. It's all chicken based.
Like Indian burrito. And then of course, like 10 years later, that became like a super hot thing in like New York and shit like that.
And Paris too. Like the most popular French food right now is like Indian food.
Indian food is the bomb.
Well, it's like 45 degrees of chicken, man.
Indian food in the U.S. is not Indian food. Like Indian food in the U.S. that like people consider like daily Indian food is like really celebratory, special occasion food.
Yeah.
Most Indian food is like fucking lentils and shit like that. Tikka masala. Actually, is really tikka masala is an Americanized version.
Is it?
It is not an authentic.
They use all our chips and things out there.
It is not an authentic dish.
That's funny because I see a lot in India. No. I see all my Indian friends are on that.
It is Indian restaurants all over the world will sell them, but if anything, it is used very rarely for like celebratory stuff. But it's not like at all a regular item. Like it's like biryani and like lentil dishes and stuff like that. Like is really the actual staple daily cuisine that they'll eat.
It's awesome. I still
have that actually varies. All India has massive range of cuisine from like north to south, east to west.
There's so many cultures there.
I can't make that as a total generalization, but
yeah, they have a lot of cultures. There's like 95 languages or something. I mean, they have so much culture there. But I'm gonna talk for 9 more hours about it.
Yeah, no.
Thank you for watching.
This has been awesome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, dude, appreciate it, man. Like, if you're watching this right now, thank you for watching on Tuesday right now. We got 870 people watching on Tuesday, so thanks for even making this part of your day. And like, to the thousands of people that hear this in the next 24 hours, like, thank you. Share this. If you have any business friends, I mean. Ideally in the St. Louis area, but I mean,
if you come to St. Louis, come have a cocktail at Trust. We'd love to see you. And, either way, if you need to get work done or you need to unwind, we've got somewhere for you.
Yeah, they have a bar and an old bank down there. It's awesome. We're about to go get more drinks. We have 10 more minutes.
Maybe we'll give them a peek.
We got 10 more minutes. Yeah, let me see what's up. Show them down there. Like. Yeah, right down here is a bar. Waiting to make our last two drinks here in a second.
It's like, you can kind of see it.
Yeah, I don't know. You just Google it. But yeah, thank you all for watching. I appreciate Rumble for featuring this. Thank you all. If you're watching something else, thank you too. This is Chris from Tech Artista. Check out the links later on.
See ya.
Thank you all for watching.